The content of this program is intended for print and visually impaired audiences. Hello, my name is Margie Flippo from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Ladies' Home Journal, December-January issue. Answer Lady. This month, our wise and witty expert takes on co-workers who drink and drive, a pal and a friend who runs perpetually late. Question. I'm worried about people drinking too much and driving after our office holiday party. How do you express this without being a party pooper? Well, I'm glad you asked, since it's much more effective to preempt this problem than to try to deal with it once the party's in progress. Don't feel shy about addressing the issue. Even colleagues who plan to limit themselves to a couple of drinks will be relieved to have a safe option. Start by talking to the staffer who's organizing the party. These days, it's not uncommon for companies to provide transportation. If you can't get your company to make a formal plan, canvas coworkers and find designated drivers, share rides, or have people split taxis. Unfortunately, no matter what you do, some people might just try to stagger out the door to their car. Be forceful. Marie, you're not going to drive home. The police are out in force at this time of year, and it's just not safe. Remind her how awful it would be to cause an accident or get a DWI. Then put her in a safe car or a cab. And something that people forget when they're drinking is it dulls your inhibitions. So what you might be able to cognitively before you're drinking say, yes, I'm not going to do that because it's not smart. Once you've got a few drinks in you, that goes away and you will do the dumbest things. So if you have to, incorporate two or three people to be bulldogs at the party. Question. My friend has recently become much more religious. She makes judgy comments and tries to get me to go to her church. By the way, I have my own. How do I tell her she's crossing the line? She probably means well. Your friend just rediscovered her faith, so naturally she's excited enough to shout it from the rooftops. But if it's straining your relationship and she doesn't tone it down, you'll need to lay it out for her plain and simple. If you're going to continue to be friends, we'll need to stop talking about religion. For me, faith is a private thing, and I'm happy with my church. It makes me uncomfortable when you try to get me to join yours. When she makes judgmental comments, say, Jane, we seem to think very differently about things these days. I think we're better off avoiding this topic. If that doesn't get her to back off, you might have to downsize or even end the relationship. Question. One of my friends is always late for dinner parties. Do the rest of us have to wait for her before we start eating? Good question. As a rule of thumb, and depending on how your food will hold up, you don't need to wait more than 15 minutes. You could jib and tell her to come 30 minutes early next time. This, of course, will probably work only once. Better yet, be straightforward. I've invited people for 7 p.m. and I'm serving at 8. If you're not here on time, I'll save you a plate. When your tardy guest finally makes her appearance, serve the course everyone else is having and don't apologize. Just give her a big smile and say, I'm glad you made it. If you would like to send in a question of your own to the Ladies' Home Journal, you may do that by going to facebook.com/LHJ Magazine. Retire richer. Making a few smart money moves now can ramp up your savings big time and help you build the nest egg you'll need. Are you saving enough for retirement? Is your money invested wisely? If you're like most people, the answers are probably no and no. But to have the kind of comfortable retirement you want, with the same standard of living you now enjoy, along with travel and visits to the grandkids built in, you have to set aside a lot of money during your working years and have something better than the pin the tail on the donkey strategy for making it grow. We know. Socking a hefty chunk of your salary into a 401k or IRA isn't easy, especially in this economy. But make no mistake, what you put away now and how carefully you manage it will determine whether you can lead the good life after your working years are done. These 9 simple steps can help you get your retirement planning on track. Number 1. Max out your retirement contributions. After the stock market dive of 2008, it's clear that throwing 4 or 5% of your annual income into a 401k or IRA and hoping for big annual returns isn't going to cut it. You're much better off contributing more and investing it less riskily, says Dallas Salisbury, president and CEO of the Employee Benefit Research Institute, a nonprofit agency in Washington, D.C. Simple rule of thumb. Try to contribute 15% of your take-home pay. That's a ton of money to pull out of your monthly budget, but remember that 401k contributions are pre-tax and those to your IRA or tax deductible, so every dollar you put away would really cost you about 75 cents. Every bit counts. If you can up your contribution level only 1% point this year, say from 9 to 10%, do it. Try to up it into 11% next year and so on. Just be aware that the 15% benchmark assumes you started contributing in your 20s. You need to add 5% for every decade you've delayed to make up for lost time, says Salisbury. So if you don't start contributing until you were in your 30s, your goal should be to contribute 20% of your salary. If you waited until you were in your 40s, make it 25, and so on. Number 2. Spread your money around. To safeguard against market downturns and to turn the best long-term profit, you need to diversify your portfolio. You want investments in U.S. and international companies. Small startups and big establishment corporation bonds and treasuries. And all the various sectors of the economy, says Thomas Collimore, Director of Investigation Education for the Chartered Financial Analysis Institute. Buy mutual funds and forget about buying individual stocks. A simple rule of thumb, let the professionals do the work. In a company-sponsored 401k plan, the core menu of mutual fund options is designed to provide a diverse array of investments. For an IRA, or any account you manage yourself, call an independent financial planner for help creating a smart mix. Because stashing your cash under your mattress won't help you build wealth. Number 3. Pick the right amount of risk. The big stock market gains of the late 90s enticed many of us into aggressive portfolios. Why mess with slow and steady bond and treasury fund returns when stock funds could see 6 to 10% annual growth? However, as we all learn, those returns can quickly undo themselves. If you're 30 and your career is ahead of you, you can't wait for the market to rebound. But if a turndown happens when you're in your 50s or 60s, it can devastate an aggressively invested nest egg. So every few years, make your portfolio more conservative. A simple rule of thumb here, keep the percentage of your nest egg in bonds roughly equal to your age. So at age 30, put 30% away. 70 in stock funds, and when you're 55, make the split 55 to 45. Number 4, set up automatic rebalancing. You've maxed out your salary contributions and chosen a good mix of mutual funds. So now you can sit back and let your money grow, right? Wrong. You need to keep your portfolio balanced. Some funds in your portfolio will outperform or underperform others. As a result, the percentages invested in each will no longer match the allocation you set up, putting you at a greater risk for loss or for missing out on a gain. So at least annually, you need to log on and rebalance your money to your originally intended proportions. Simple rule of thumb. Ask whether your retirement account offers an automatic rebalancing program, says Salisbury. This free and widely available computerized service allocates your money to match your chosen allocations. Select at least annual rebalancing, or as often as quarterly. What to do when times are tight? If a job loss or salary reduction leaves your household strapped for cash, should you reduce your retirement contributions? That's a good question. If you must trim your 401k contributions, never drop below the amount needed to get the maximum company match. For example, some employers kick the equivalent of 3% of your salary if you put in 6% on your own. Giving up that match is like throwing money in the wastebasket, says Dallas Salisbury. When it comes to retirement, every little bit will help. Number 5. Play it safe with target funds. One alternative to allocating and rebalancing is to forego mutual funds and choose a single target fund offered by many 401k plans and IRAs. Target funds don't invest in stocks, bonds, and treasuries. Instead, they buy other mutual funds and are designed with a particular time horizon in mind. If you're 50 and expect to work 14 more years, for instance, you can get a target of 2025 fund. If you're 40, you'd get a target of 2035 fund. They automatically rebalance themselves and become more conservative over time based on target dates. But be aware that some target funds are fairly aggressive strategies. During the worst of the 2008 stock plunge, some 2010 funds, which should have been very conservative given the closeness of their target date, were down 45%. And the simple rule of thumb, if your mutual fund company offers both aggressive and conservative target funds, choose the latter, says Salisbury. Otherwise, pick one designed to mature earlier. Number 6. Judge fund by fees, not past results. Most investment brochures warn that past performance does not guarantee future results. So ignore past performance numbers and focus on one stat that is sure to impact your returns, your cost. Funds with low expenses tend to have the best performance over time, according to Christine Benz, Director of Personal Finance at the investment research company Morningstar. Choose no-load funds which don't charge fees for the right to buy, sell, or hold them. As some mutual funds do, they do have management cost, however, and when you're comparing similar funds, look at their fees, which are listed in the plan paperwork as a percentage of assets. One international growth fund might change 2%, while other wants 0.5%. The lowest fee funds and probably the best bet for most people are index funds, which simply mirror a stock or bond index such as the S&P 500, and thus have no high price management team, bringing annual cost as low as 0.2% or less. They perform most managed funds anyway. The simple rule of thumb here, choose funds on Morningstar that have a top track record. You can see a free rating from 1 to 5 stars of any mutual fund based on its fees, strategies, potentials, returns, and risk at Morningstar.com. Number 7. Prepay the mortgage. Paying off your mortgage or any debt as fast as possible is one of the best plans to plan for your retirement, says Salisbury. After all, if you wipe out your mortgage before you retire, you eliminate your largest monthly expense, and with savings account interest rates at historic lows, you'll get a much better return by putting extra cash toward the mortgage anyway. The simple rule of thumb, adding about $100 to each monthly mortgage payment will knock 5 years off 30-year $200,000 loan and save almost $50,000 in interest, too. Number 8. Add a Roth if you can. Thanks to ballooning national debt, many experts predict significantly higher tax rates in coming decades. That makes the Roth 401k and IRA benefits better than ever, says Salisbury. With Roth, you trade in a tax benefit now for one when you retire, rather than writing off annual contributions as you do with the standard IRA, or can prepay tax dollars as a standard 401k. You get no tax advantage in the current year, but when you make withdrawals after retirement, you'll pay no taxes, since tax rates may be more onerous then. That could be a better deal. A simple rule of thumb, put as much of your retirement contribution as possible into a Roth. Many 401k plans now allow Roth contributions. If your adjusted gross income is less than $120,000 or $167,000 for a married couple, you can put up to $5,000 or $6,000 if you're over 50 years old into a Roth IRA. Number 9, buy long-term care insurance. The biggest financial risk we all face as we age is the potential need for long-term care. It might be a visiting nurse, an assisted living facility, or a nursing home, all of which are extremely expensive. True, you can get Medicaid to pick up the tab, but only for limited care options, and often after you have to liquidate and turn over all of your assets. Alternatively, long-term care insurance can defray the cost, giving you choices in the care you receive and protecting your assets, says Kim Holland, insurance commissioner for the state of Oklahoma. Look for a policy that offers inflation adjustments so that your coverage amount will go up as medical costs escalate. And confirm that the issuer will be around to pay by checking its financial strength with the ratings agency's S&P. S&P stands for StandardsandPoors.com. Moody's, Moody's.com, A.M. Best, that's Amabest.com, and Fitch Ratings.com. The simple rule of thumb, if you can afford to, buy a policy where you're in your 50s. It can cost a whopping $150 to $400 a month. But if you wait until your 60s, you'll pay about $200 to $600 a month. And if you get sick in the interim, you may be denied a policy altogether. It's a shocking trend, gay teens being bullied to the point of suicide. Isn't it time for all of us to encourage compassion and respect, no matter how we feel about homosexuality? By Kenneth Miller. September 9, Billy Lucas, age 15, of Greensboro, Indiana, hung himself from the rafters of his family's barn. September 19th, Seth Walsh, 13, of Tecape, California, hanged himself from a tree in his yard. September 22nd, Tyler Clementi, 18, at Rutgers University freshman, jumped off the George Washington Bridge in New York City. September 23rd, Asher Brown, 13, of Houston, Texas, shot himself in the head. These four boys didn't know each other, but they did have something in common. They were being bullied at school, and one by one, they all apparently came to the same conclusion. If you are a gay, or if you are thought to be a gay, life is not worth living. For most Americans, the news reports are heartbreaking. They took us beyond our political arguments over gay marriage and don't ask, don't tell, even past our deeper disagreements about homosexuality. For once, we could all agree, these kids should be in their classrooms, not in caskets. September's gruesome trend raised pressing questions. Homosexuality appears to be more widely tolerated than ever. 52% of Americans consider it morally acceptable, according to a recent Gallup poll. Kids can join gay-straight alliance groups at more than 4,000 high schools and more than 150 middle schools nationwide, and find advice and support online. Yet according to the Journal of Adolescent Health, about one-third of gay, lesbian, and bisexual teens report an attempt at suicide. Why are so many still driven to try to take their own lives? Despite recent cultural shifts, kids still get an overwhelming message from society that homosexuality is not acceptable, says Scott Quaisha, psychiatric doctor, a professor at a school of psychology in Brooklyn College. It is not uncommon to hear fierce condemnation from politicians and preachers as they debate gay civil rights. Homosexuality is compared to incest, bestiality, even violent crime. This trickles down into the schools where bullying occurs, says Dr. Quasha. A gay child is an easy target for classmates looking to make trouble. How does this affect all of us? Anti-gay bullying is something all parents should be concerned about, says Merle Bennett Bizzle, who oversees the public school anti-violence programming in Akron, Ohio. The victims are not just students who are actually gay, she points out. The abuse is also directed at straight kids who don't quite fit the gender norms. A tomboy girl and guys who show interest in, say, gymnastics or dance are often called the same names and subjected to the same ostracism and attacks as their gay and lesbian classmates. There's no evidence that Billy Lucas was gay, but he was different, classmates said. And because of that, bullies called him fag and told him he didn't deserve to live. Of course, for kids who do experience same-sex attraction, the use of the word gay as an all-purpose put-down is just one more painful indication that they just don't fit in, whether or not they look or act any different from their peers, says Dr. Quasha. Being a teenager is tough enough, says Jody M. Huckabee, executive director of Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. That's PFLAG, a national organization. There's so much peer pressure that when you're constantly getting these messages that you're not okay, the pressure can just be too much. For some kids, it's hard to imagine that life will ever get better. The power you have as a parent. Since the parents of gay kids are generally not gay themselves, even the most loving can find it hard to know how to respond when their child comes out. When Rashad Davis was 15, his mom, Dion Davis, sensed that there was something he wasn't telling her. He was very, very depressed, she recalled. Dion is 44. She's a dialysis nurse from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'd say, honey, please talk to me. You know I can handle it. He'd say, no, Mom, it's just school. And he would go to his room. When driving him to school one day, I saw cuts all over his arm. I asked if he was hurting himself. He said yes. Afraid that Rashid might be suicidal, Dion called his health insurance plan, which sent a therapist directly to their home. A few weeks later, with the therapist present, Rashid told his mom the source of his agony. He realized he was gay, and he was terrified that family and friends would reject him. I took a big swallow, says Dion. I forced myself to say, okay, and hug him. But then I went off, and I cried all night long. Dion was confused. This was the last thing she'd expected. Rashid was 200% boy, she explains. He wanted to play every sport and do every boy thing, and despite what she'd told her son, she really wasn't okay with it at all. I'd been taught in my family and my church that being gay was wrong, and I thought Rashid was going to go to hell. I thought, this is disgusting. What are people going to say about us? My sister, his father, my mother, my father. Still, something told her she'd be better not to share her fear with her son, and she was soon grateful to have made that decision. A week later, Rashid told her about the anti-gay bullying he'd been experiencing at school. I don't care if anybody else accepts me as long as you do, he told her. That comment really changed her attitude. I knew I would have to be his protector and guide, she said. It wasn't easy to cope with her negative feelings. Dion began working with a therapist connected with the PFLAG and read up on gay issues. Bolstered by his mom's support, Rashid soon transformed to a more accepting high school. I regained my confidence and started smiling more, he recalls. Now 19, Rashid is doing well as a sophomore at Florida Gulf Coast University. Dion Davis played it exactly right, says the clinical social worker Caitlin Ryan, Ph.D., Director of Family Acceptance Project at San Francisco State University. After almost a decade of research on gay, lesbian, and bisexual transgender teens, Dr. Ryan's group has found a clear pattern. The more supportive the parents and family, the better the kids do over the long run. That doesn't necessarily mean changing your deeply held beliefs, Dr. Ryan explains. It means finding a way to balance those beliefs with the love you have for your child. When parents become activists. E.J. Pilata's parents had suspected he was gay since he was 4 years old, when he ditched his G.I. Joe in favor of dolls and jewelry. But it wasn't until he was 13, friendless and depressed, that they brought it up, worried their son was headed for a breakdown at the Modesto, California couple felt. Oh. We've run out of time for today's episode, From Soup to Nuts. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Margie Flippo, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for print and visually impaired audiences. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.